Excuse me. The speaker appears to be muted on Zoom, and so we can't hear any of the audio.
Thanks.
There's that better. Can you guys hear me in
Yes.
Zoom?
Yeah,
Yes,
John,
thank
sound
you.
good.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much, Kalila. So some of my counterparts, co-conspirators on there, Kalila and Zach Burke, they're on the meeting. So apologies for that. All right. What can go wrong, Will? All right, let me get back on track here. So that was a little bit about me. So stepping in to get into the so the meat of user preferences. Well, I guess first off, some reasonings as to why we want to do this. You know, because we're years deep into the project right now. And user preferences, they're kind of this thing that projects can either that they can either avoid them as some kind of, you know, this is a Pandora's box, we don't want to open it, or they can go a little bit too deep and just do way too much, and to where they can kind of get overbearing. So we're going to sort of try to guide things a little bit, give some direction. As we're coming up with ideas on the creative side of things before we do the development on these features. So why do this? So the main thing is user empowerment. Right now, a lot of the code in Folio, you know, the UI is there's a lot of static features in place. And so we want to make that a lot more dynamic. Enable that UI and Folio to change shape a little bit and conform to some of the needs of our users. Right now, you know, having these things static, not so dynamic, it's kind of a drag going through that development process, submitting tickets, waiting for the process to take. Eventually, it gets developed and, that's kind of a drag. So with user preferences in place, it'll be a tool for the users themselves to go in, make some changes, and then come out with the UI that might be a little more suited for their particular workflow or their purpose. And it's a flexible way to account for workflow differences from one staff member to another. And I'm leveraging the Tarkovsky quote, a book read by a thousand different people is a thousand different books. Well, a user interface used by a thousand different users, thousand different users' interfaces. That's kind of exaggeration, but it does deliver the kind of situation that we're hoping we can wrangle with this feature. So preference cases that we've got so far and we've done development work with so far. The first one that you guys can see on our snapshot environment right now is application reordering. The ability to, for a user to go in and rearrange the order of those application links in the top navigation. To their liking, it's made a pretty good difference for developers like me who, well, we spend a lot of time in users app, and that usually ends up at the bottom of that alphabetized list. But being able to go into our preferences, rearrange, move that users to the beginning, it's a good ergonomic difference in the UI. So that feature is released with Sunflower. And then future releases, we'll see with Trillium, we're going to see localization features worked into user preferences as well. So a user will be able to go in and set a particular custom locale that'll handle the translations, handle things like date format, and then they'll be able to change out the numbering system too. So some of it is breaking apart the pieces of that locale package that might not particularly be suited for a user. But those things can particularly be blocking on a user's experience to use the application. So we'll get into a not too technical bit about how things mostly work. So under the hood, the Folio user preferences make use of a backend module called mod settings. We have Mike and Adam. These guys are from Index Data. They assembled mod settings. So a lot of the stuff in this presentation, this feature, it stands on these guys' shoulders. Just want to give a good shout out to those guys. Mod settings features has better security than what we had previously, mod configuration. It'll take those preferences and store them behind some read and write permissions. So it's leveraging the permission system that Folio already has in place. It'll also associate those preferences per user. And it'll store both the tenant and those user preferences. So it's doing a lot for us. It's the workhorse here. So going into that, both tenant and user preferences, whenever those preferences actually meet the UI, we have something that I just call the cascade of preferences, where you might have a configuration that the platform is constructed with, built with, and then you'd have a layer of tenant preferences that can override that, or usually it cascades to the tenant preferences. And then now we have the new user preferences layer overriding that, which eventually bakes out to the user and what the user sees. So made a little bit of a diagram here. So we can see on the tenant side of the diagram, we've got app order, we've got locale, and we got numbering system. Those are all set up as tenant prefs. And that passes to the user layer where they've seen fit to change app order and change numbering system to something that better suits them. And as you can see, with the green arrows, those settings are overriding the tenant settings. And in the locale, for the locale tenant, you can see they kept the locale in place. So it passes on through, cascades on through to the user, to the blue people. So some perspective direction. So given this sort of blank canvas of a new thing that we can take advantage of in our apps, product owners can implement cool things with this. We got to be careful, I think, as to how far we end up taking it. So that's where the design guidance of this presentation kind of comes in, trying to corral a little bit so that we can hopefully keep the stack of preferences that we're going to supply controls for, keep the user experience of just dealing with those things smaller. So it's like what idea belongs here? Well, not all of them. You can obviously get very, very subjective with user preferences. I really love lemons, so I want my UI to be yellow. You can end up with things like that potentially. So a good guideline that can help sort of cull things out is not necessarily start with, hey, I've just got this idea, let's put this in there. Is to actually go problem first, a problem-centric approach. So what particular workflow issue, what are we trying to solve? So we already talked about in the other cases with app reordering, just the general convenience of not having those application links buried anymore in the menu, as well as what we resolved with the locale setting and the numbering system setting. And there are cases in Folio where the defaults just, they aren't as solid as they could be. Working in the centralized libraries of things, I'd really like for it not to be my job. I'd like to get out of the position of trying to figure out defaults that work for a wide body of people. And so far, in cases like I've noted here, keyboard shortcuts, we've been in that scenario where we've come up with things that could hopefully suit a wide body of our user base, but there's still some individuals due to locale that their keyboard is in, our defaults just don't work for them. So if we can put those things, give them away via user preferences to set those keyboard shortcuts themselves to something that works for them, then they can actually make use of those features that we've set up. There's a lot of other constraints too that we find ourselves up against when we're trying to create these defaults, things like for keyboard shortcuts, are you going to be overlapping with a browser shortcut key, or is it a screen reader shortcut key? And not everybody, you know, on a per user basis, not everybody has a lot of those constraints in place. So they can set up things to their own liking. And then we have cases where the purposes might vary widely among the users. So say you're in circulation data versus cataloging data when you're looking at these inventory records. Such a data-dense interface like Folio has can be a little too much of a good thing. And so less is more when it comes to the stack of preferences, because each one of these, each preference that we add, it's a new feature. It's going to have the same kind of testing, development overhead, maintenance overhead that the other ones do. And all your features in the future of this, they're going to require consideration of the new preference. And quality versus quantity. So we want to try and keep the user interface for these things simple. Keep it straightforward. And don't give users that much of an additional hill climb or heap to dig through on these controls. So when I'm not doing Folio things, I do work in 3D animation, so I use a lot of those tools. And these packages are notorious for pretty crazy user preferences. This is an example, and we don't have that particular purpose. This is not us, so I don't want us to become this. Sorry, Blender. So another part, another method, another thing we can do to just keep the stack of preferences low is going to be just through community and being able to bring our ideas to SIGs, the SIG discussions. They had a great session yesterday. I encourage you guys, if you haven't, go check out that slide deck. Gives you a rundown of all the different SIGs involved in Folio, and they would be right on top of talking about what kind of preferences that they could incorporate and talk about, pass through to POs, get made into tickets, and made to work. Because eventually, you know, these things, they start out as an idea or a problem, and you know, the solution would change shape through those conversations. Hey, I've got this problem. Oh, well, I've also got this other thing too, you know, and maybe we can coalesce these things together to ultimately get a cleaner solution that's going to kill two birds, solve two people's problems with one stone. Pardon me. So allowing those collective experiences to shape the solution. And also, the more we talk about them in a community a little bit, problems can get litmus tested. Is this really the particular solution that we need for something? I asked Copilot to give me an image of the best design meeting in the world, and it gave me one that's they needed a sign to make it so. So there you go. Thanks. Thanks for being obvious. Yeah. Now we're getting into some, we're getting closer to the visuals, don't worry. We've been a lot of words so far. UI ingredients. So the UI for these settings, it's going to facilitate the cascade that I talked about earlier, that transition from your tenant preferences to your user down to the UI and back. So a key feature of each of these controls would be a reset button. It's kind of like if you're, say, coding like an audio player, one of the first things you want to make is a mute or pause, something that allow you to just go back, get back to where you were. And that's where the reset button comes in. And then indicated overrides. So employing a pattern like this can help a user see which controls they've actually affected. So users, these settings will likely be very set and forget. So once they set them, they may not look at that UI, you know, as long as it's comfortable, they may not look at that UI again for a while. So being able to go back to that UI and at a glance see, hey, I've overridden that one. Obviously, here's what it's set to. And here's the tenant setting that it overrode. Having that indicated in the UI would be very useful. And of course, the user inputs, they should match patterns from other options just for sake of the familiarity. It just uses the same form controls that a lot of other or other Folio forms use. And the purpose of these should be obvious at a glance. This means adequate labeling. So a user should see the label on a control for a preference. They should be able to relate that back to a part of the main UI of the application. And it should be obvious what that's going to do. And this is going to mean, in a lot of instances, that the controls are just kept simple. They're simply described by their label alone. If it gets too complex, you could put some more descriptive text in there, but really being on the side of brevity is only going to help. So some examples of more single purpose controls would be like visibility of sections of the UI or columns displayed. Stuff that you guys are already a little familiar with our show hide columns UI that we have on a lot of the results tables. So now we get to some visuals to show you what these might look like. So up top, we have a settings default view. In this case, we're using a select drop-down box, and it's just the setting. The default here is it's just what they would get from the tenant settings as is. And then when a user changes that setting, that's when things get interesting. Now we have an indicator, an info popover component that's, once it's expanded, can indicate what the default or the tenant option was set to that we overwrote, as well as the accompanying reset button that I mentioned. So incorporating that pattern and supporting that cascade, let users change that setting, let them reset to the default, level everything out for themselves, and we'll round out the cascade. So now we're going to take these ingredients that we talked about, and we're going to go through maybe a little bit more practical walkthrough example. So problem first, you got different jobs from across different staff members, but they use the same inventory app. Now, most of our Folio UI modules have a similar pattern of the search filters, search results, detail view. And while repeating that same pattern makes Folio apps pretty learnable, it does create an issue where that generic pattern is used where in a lot of the dense data that's there, it might be too much of a good thing for some users. So the idea here is that we might employ a similar technique to what we do with our columns on our results display and use some checkboxes to hide and show parts of that detail view. So let me just back up a little bit and just say, this is just an example. In fact, this is a very cooking show version of what we could probably get whenever we put these user preferences to practice. These don't even represent real work items just yet. There's no tickets made or anything like that. So it's just to inspire. If we were really taking this through the process, we'll definitely be going through other considerations. The data within these sections that we're hiding, is any of that stuff going to be missed? You know, what's the impact of this at other settings? What about other views? Because we've only talked about the detail view in this example, right? We got edit views. There's also item details, holdings details to worry about. How do we want to handle those things? So there would probably be a little bit more fleshing out to do before we actually got down and did the work of this. So our control solution, cooking show version, so the checkbox list, you can see we've got the obvious labeling, data section visibility, and the checkbox list below. Each one of these checkbox labels corresponds with one of the accordions that's on that instance detail page. And then we've got our overridden control where data section visibility, and you can see they've toggled some of those checkboxes off. You can see the usage of the info popover, which showing the default, for brevity's sake, I just had all visible there. But no reason why that popover couldn't actually list If it's something besides all visible, it can list what you would have normally visible there. And also the reset button. And so then our result comes out to where the user has gone in, unchecked a couple of those checkboxes, and behold, it's cleaned up our detail view a little bit, just hidden those bits of data that are maybe too much of a good thing for that particular staff member. And it's a good way that we can tailor that Folio experience, make that experience a little bit smaller for people who it just might be too big for. So with that example and everything behind us, you can go forth and you can imagine some great things for our users with this. It's a super powerful feature. That's a picture of my son having a great time. So some future preference cases that we'll see and we'll probably put through that formal process. A preferred date time format for display, right? So this is going to be, well, this would be another step in that process. We're going through of sort of breaking down that locale and making it so that a user can kind of conform the settings that they get with that. So specifying a date time format so they can view their dates, potentially edit dates in as well, and hopefully get some consistency as far as the presentation layer from that. Theme selection. This is another very cool one too. You guys would probably like a dark mode. And of course, there's a whole bunch of stuff at the application level that I'm sure POs would love to work in. Persisting data display, not just doing local storage, not just session, you know, for some of the columns, sections, actually persisting those in settings, and the keyboard shortcuts, which we mentioned. And then future development, eventually we'll probably gain the requirement of having more shared components to dedicate to these. I can definitely see a key map keyboard thing in our future when that gains popularity. Something, a development layer maybe for the Cascade so that a developer can go in, do some work without maybe having to fuss too much with like Postman, adding permissions, going through a lot of those motions that we have to do when we're working with these preferences. And then more collaboration with Stripes Force. That's the team I'm on. And Kimi Kester is our UX design person. We'd love to help you guys. If you guys have ideas around these, hey, there's a problem here. You know, we're trying to wrangle, or maybe we're trying to wrangle multiple problems. How can we leverage user preferences? How can we create a UI and a UX experience that's gonna help make Folio a more powerful platform, more powerful product? So I've got a little bit of time left. There's a developer appendix at the end of this slide that has some more technical information in it. It's mainly a guide that sort of describes what mod settings requires, and then what the permission side of things requires. I don't think I'm going to step too much into that here, but feel free to download the slides from SCED and take a look. Stepping on through these. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you guys coming to my session. Hope you guys have found it inspiring. And if you guys have any questions about things, I'd love to hear them. Just got you. You Mike?
Has any thought been given to the possibility maybe of allowing users to share their preferences with other users? I can see, for instance, you know, you talked about how catalogers work with inventory compared to how circulation works with inventory. And I can see a situation where lots of circulation clerks want that same setting. So is that in the cards? Has there been any discussion about that? Just curious.
Okay, so I can't really say there's been some pointed discussion and it's a prioritized feature, but I have some of that in mind. And that's kind of the extent, really, about community sharing preferences, that kind of stuff. I mean, I think that's definitely something we'd like to put in the cards for sure. It's something I want there.
Yeah, my question was actually kind of like in the same area as Joe's, is yeah. That I was wondering if there was thought to having multiple tenant level settings so that you could set up profiles for different work areas within the library and even multiple user settings, because I could see, especially people in like technical services and cataloging, actually wanting to be able to switch back and forth between different views of inventory based mm-hmm. on what they're doing that day or that week or that hour.
Okay. So yeah, we could somehow loop these things under a category, and maybe it's not like a checkbox list per se, or, you know, we could consolidate these things in a different way to actually give, you know, profiles, something to that effect.
I have two questions. First one, I agree with the concern about how this could become a mountain and very much support the idea of letting the problems come first and letting the SIGs sort of come up with the problems first. However, counterexample to that, there's a similar problem that you showed in two different ways and had two different solutions for, which is there's too many of this. So with the top level apps, the solution was to reorder them. And with the sub menus under inventory, the solution was to hide some of them. Mm-hmm. And a third solution could have been, you know, to minimize or maximize different ones of them by default, or any combination of these things, right? So I imagine you could have a similar problem in different apps and four different SIGs or three different SIGs having three different solutions to that same problem. Is there a role of like the cross app SIG in this, or any other sort of coordination to try to solve the same problem in the same way? Or is that a bad idea because the individual apps should be solving it their own way?
I think absolutely the cross app SIG. In fact, they were the first that came to mind whenever it came to this talk about who we would get in the community to take a look at this. Unfortunately, I think they've got a session that's overlapping right now. but I actually went up and sort of plugged among the SIGs, you know, and mentioned to them, hey, I'm gonna plug you guys tomorrow in my user preferences talk. And people are going to come see you guys. So cross-app SIG, yeah, we definitely don't want a lot of different problems solved in a bunch of different ways, right? We do want to corral things. And I think a lot of this is going to be, it's going to be in the organic process, right, of working it out, seeing what's on our plate. It'd be pretty ideal if we establish a place like maybe on the wiki, a page, some sort of preferences roadmap, you know, so that people can just see what ideas are coming down the pipe, if there's anything they share with it, and if there's a SIG that's handling it or talking about it, they can make those SIG meetings. Those guys would love to have you. So yeah, definitely a consideration of keeping things to a pattern.
So this may be in the slides there somewhere, but, or I might've missed it, but I wanted to kind of confirm, so you mentioned mod settings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have something in an application like what you mentioned, where in some of those MCL tables, we have like show hide columns.
Yeah, right.
And to this point, a lot of that's been implemented as like a session based setting. Mm-hmm. So is it mod settings where we would now be able to store these preferences that would allow?
It's possible. It's possible to do it there.
Like even for those types of things, something that might not be like a toggle that they want to change, but a thing that we want to persist just mm-hmm. for that user. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think it very well could be it. So mod settings, it is that sort of, JSON object storage, and it has this cordoned off, layer of user, that it associates things with. So I don't see why it wouldn't be, I think you there are probably some concern there about how those get saved, and the general user experience of working with that as a persistent storage that we would have to talk about. But there's a lot of potential, I think, to moving those kind of things there and have it persist.
Thanks. Hmm?
You mentioned having this as kind of a way to, I'm going to say escape valve for having to make decisions about the UI. Is there a danger in that? I mean, because defaults matter. I mean, defaults are important. Defaults are for critical sure. to the way that people experience software. And if we're not putting as much care and thought into that initial UI design because we have this escape valve, is that a potential problem?
The nutshell answer to that would be, if it's such a heavy default, then it's probably a case where we wouldn't want to make it an option, in the first place, right? And there are these kind of things that come out that we may not want an option for, right? And I think that's where your SIG and your community involvement can help, because some people may see a problem and some people may have a workaround right off or an easier way of functioning around that. And some things that could work their way, I think, through the process of becoming a part of the UI, that's where the litmus testing, I think, that I mentioned comes in, and that community layer comes in to really work through these things, be sure that it is absolutely what we want before we're going to fully integrate that control in the UI. There's more process in front. It's not really, it's not going to be so immediate, although it will be exciting, I think, for people if they share collective problems, they can see this feature coming down the pipe and know that they're going to get help with it. I don't know if that's completely adequate for what you were looking for.
One more question for me. I would categorize two ways some of the examples that you shared. The locale one, I think, is great. That's something that couldn't be done by the user with a line or two of JavaScript on themselves. And then there's the ones that can, like hiding something. Is there a role for user scripts here as potentially a gateway step? Having a library of user scripts that people could click a link, install in their browser as part of a plugin, right? And to hide something, to simple things like that, either mm-hmm. to relieve the pressure of having there to be development on the Stripe side for that, or potentially if you have 100 people using the same user script, then maybe that's a reason there should be that preference in the package.
So this is kind of reading my mind just a little bit too, and where I'm of the mind that our users could potentially dig in, give them something kind of technical that they can dig into, like a script or something that they could provide. It's like no official development, really has been prioritized for something like that. But I think it's an interesting idea. you know, of having, and it's right on the heels of what Joe had mentioned about like sharing preferences. I think some of those things may be kind of in the same category, and we can maybe use a similar mechanism for some of those things. But yeah, giving our power users, you know, just even more power in that place, in that case, where we sort of open up the UI a little bit more. So let's see. So I just got a message in the Zoom chat that mentioned making changes on Snapshot. Of course, a lot of people are on there in the admin account, and they get overwritten over each other. So maybe you want to have a custom user before you want to go in and start playing with things on Snapshot, like I mentioned. let's see. Anybody else?
Just one comment. The more preferences that get added as things we could actually do, it's nice to have the single reset, but eventually you probably just want to reset all to default.
Yeah. Yeah. If things do get particularly heavy, you know, reset all, it I guess it sort of depends on how, you know, we could consolidate those and just add that, you know, so you'd reset everything that already maybe had a reset button next to it. And that's kind of how the app reordering works already. It's just got a big fat reset all button up at the top, reset to defaults button. So a question came up about date preferences in the Zoom. For date preferences, MMDDYYY, we also have the option of writing full month. Some of this is really limited to our just date entry mechanisms right now, but I don't see why once we were to implement, you know, a date format preferences, why it couldn't have potential. You know, it's just right now, I think the controls themselves don't directly allow that as far as the format input. But hey, I think if it's a popular enough ask, it could work its way through and get prioritized. And special thanks to Kalila and Zach. They've been fielding things in the Zoom while I've been just talking away up here. Some other questions that come up. How do you propose to have a testing environment that can reflect the defaults and also be able to test new functionality with preferences?
Don, I think Yes. That was related to the snapshot question.
Okay. All right. Right. Yeah. So I think it's definitely a layer that we would have to figure out. I think, you know, your reset all button and your ability to take care of that, and it may be testing standard practices that we would go in reset all prior to doing testing with these things. I don't know if that completely answers that question from Zoom, but having those easy enough mechanisms in place where we're not having to just fully rebuild Snapshot, if we can get it in a practice, work it in that way to process flow, then that might be okay. All right, let's see. Well, I appreciate you guys coming. And thank you. Thank you for the developers. Thank you, attendees. Thanks for attending WolfCon.
Thank you, John. This is great.
Thank you very much.
Maybe they just got your cat. Well,